This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
I was probably closer to my grandfather than probably anybody. I've never really talked about this. It was 2 or 3 burglars, we believe, and he died 5 days later. Like, it's so horrendous to even talk about it now. It brings it all back. But I think the guards in Waterford took their foot off the gas. The guard said to me, "You need to quieten down, Keith, because you're affecting the investigation." So I quietened down. And ever since I quietened down, the guards have never rang us since.
How are you today, Mary? How are things?
I'm feeling very good. I'm feeling this is going to be a magical day.
Oh, gosh. Right. Okay.
Do you remember, Tommy Cooper, the magician?
Oh, I do.
Just like that.
I remember that. That's
right.
Oh, my
God. I love that. Did you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did. I love Tommy Cooper.
Well, we've come on a few generations since, haven't we?
But I also knew that what the stuff he was doing, you know, wasn't real magic as such. You know?
But this is.
See, yeah, we're dealing with somebody today who's just scaring the heck out of me. But
totally
go on anyway.
Totally magic. Keith Barry, you're very, very welcome to Changing Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
And my goodness, your list of achievements is amazing. Like, we're talking Ellen DeGeneres, we're talking fabulous programmes on RTE, and the top 20 TED Talks still from 2004. But I have to talk to you about, first of all, the number you did on me. It was on Open House.
Oh, yeah.
And this is what really gets me. We're talking about changing times here in this podcast. And you change things. You can change the way people think. But what you did with me was you asked me to think. It was a Christmas program was coming up. And you asked me to think of a present that I really loved getting as a child, okay, and to draw a picture of it and then to fold over the piece of paper, which I did. But I said, well, I'm not going to make this easy for him.
Yeah.
So I just said, pick something weird. And I drew a fridge.
You actually got a fridge for Christmas?
I drew, no, I didn't.
Oh, that's
I
just,
I was, didn't. But I drew a fridge. And I do not know, but you told me that I had drawn a fridge.
But you know, here's the funny thing. I can tell you now, I remember that now. I've never had anybody think of a fridge since then. Just, you know, you're my only fridge in history.
You think there might be obvious reasons for that?
But how did you know? Did I give off some kind of a vibe?
Yeah, well, that's what I do, is I read nonverbal signals. And look, there's a whole lot to what I do, obviously. Look, you know, I'm a scientist first and foremost. And then obviously I have a magical background since I'm 5. And then, you know, my girlfriend, when I was in college, who's my wife now, she was studying psychology. So I learned psychology. And then there's obviously trickery and deception and neuro-linguistic programming. So it's a whole host of different techniques to try and figure out what somebody is thinking at a specific moment in time. But a lot of it is to do with micro-expressions. And
I must have been giving off an Ice Queen vibe, was
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, yeah. No, maybe you've warmed since then, Mary. I don't know. You might have warmed up.
It's incredible, isn't it? It really is.
I just find that quite scary. When you were in college, I mean, would you be able to intuit what an examiner was thinking of asking, like an exam questions and things like that?
So I'll give you a thing, right? So I believe if I was to get my IQ done now, right, I'd say I have an average or maybe even below average IQ. Because when I was in school, I actually was just, I think 360 points in the leaving the first time, which wasn't enough to even do science. So I had to repeat. And then I think I got 435 the second time, but I had to study hard for that. But then when I was in college, to go back to your question, for some reason, I kind of developed almost like a photographic memory, if you want to call it that. So I found college quite easy and I was just getting one ones the
whole way through. I'm hoping you study in there.
So science, but the reason I did science is Mr. Barry, as we knew him back in Mount Sinai secondary school, he gave us one of those aptitude tests, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, look, whatever you do in college, don't do science. Now, I knew I was always going to be a magician or a brain hacker or something like that. So just out of badness, I decided, because I had no interest in going to college, but my parents were like, magic is great as a hobby, you're going to college. So I thought, well, what'll I do? Well, Mr. Barry said, don't do science. So I'll do science. Like, that's the only reason that I did science. So I did science, predominantly chemistry.
But you did cosmetic science as well, didn't
you?
Yeah,
so I finished in, here's something not a lot of people know, and I'm only saying this just for context. So, I didn't study that hard. I was one of the piss heads in college, truth be told. I was in the college bar more often than not, you know. But I did pretty well in college to the extent that 4 years later, when I was graduating, I actually got the top ever chemistry marks that anybody had gotten.
Really?
That anybody gotten at that time in UCG, to the extent that they sent me a plaque with a £50 check as well. And everybody asked me,
you're smarter than you think.
Well, everybody asked me, did I frame the check? And I was like, no, I was 21, I cashed the check. So, but back to that, then yeah, I became a cosmetic scientist by trade. So I used to invent women's makeup for Oriflame, which is a Swedish cosmetics company. Mm-hmm. And
you weren't tempted to go down that professional route, you know, after getting the Paul Daniels set?
I always knew I was going to be a professional magician, but I was only doing everything else to appease other people and appease my parents by going to college. And then obviously you need money when you get out of college.
And would you have used the magician trick thing all the way through college? Were you doing gigs?
Yeah, so I started doing gigs when I was 15. So I'm, give or take, about 6 foot. My dad's probably 5'8", right? And I borrowed his jacket. And I was 6 foot when I was 15. I borrowed his jacket. So it was like too short for me and the sleeves were too short. And I went down around Waterford, which is our home city, and went down around there trying to figure out a restaurant that would allow me in to do close-up magic from table to table. So anyway, ultimately, I got into what's called the Wine Vault. It's gone since, but that's a restaurant that was very well known in Waterford. And I ended up doing close-up magic in there from when I was 15. So I've been gigging since I'm 15.
Is that kind of card tricks? Or?
Yeah, card tricks, going from table to table.
Sleight of hand.
Sleight of hand and all that kind of stuff. And then ultimately, it kind of snowballed on from there. But yeah, started down there. And then back to your question, like I gigged then the whole way through college. And then during the summers, while I was in college, would you believe it, I was the kids magician on the boats from Rosslair to Roscoff in Cherbourg. So that's what I would do during the summers. I'd go on those boats, those ferries, and I would do like whatever it was, an hour performance every day on the boats. That was great fun, actually, looking back at that, you know.
But it's a step beyond that, the sleight of hand and the magician's tricks, you know, to have that mentalism.
Yeah, mentalism. So I think people are familiar with that word, whereas 15 years ago, if you mentioned mentalism, people would be like, what's that? Mm. So mentalism, is that part of the art where you're playing with people's minds, really. And I really got heavily into that when I was probably 22. So when I left college, I'd studied all my Mairead, my girlfriend at the time, her psychology books. And then when I left college, I remember meeting Tony Sadar. So Tony did a lot of work in the US and stuff. And Tony tells, like, so Tony's still a good friend of mine. He's 82 or 83 and still working out of Cabin Teely. Mm. And he's got an office in Cabin Teely. But he started to teach me hypnosis when I was, now I learned hypnosis from when I was 15. But
teaching you that? Where would you go to learn it?
So I was just teaching myself.
Yourself?
Yeah, from books from when I was 15. and trying it on people. So literally just going up to people and trying to hypnotize them.
And it was working.
And it was working. It started to work. But I didn't really know a lot about it until I met Tony. And then Tony kind of took me under his wing and really taught me hypnosis heavily. And that's when you get back to the mentalism. Yeah. So, you know, mentalism and hypnosis, they're really, I suppose, cousins of each other. And mm-hmm. you'd require one to understand the other.
But when you're on stage and you're thinking of, you know, your audience and influencing them,
yeah.
it can go either way, can't it? It's a big risk, isn't it, Keith?
But I always say this in life in general. So not just with what I do, but just even to people listening, I always push to failure. So failure is part of what I do. I don't mind pushing to failure. Like, I don't take it personally when I fail. And people... Like,
do people not actually love when you fail, though?
Well, but here's the thing. Most people... They don't think I'm ever going to fail. And when I do fail, they think it's part of the act. That's what I think is hilarious. Because if something goes wrong, like the audience is waiting. Yeah, the audience is like, oh my God, you know, he's in trouble, but he's not really. You know, he's just pretending he's in trouble. But like, I've failed thousands of times. I failed to hypnotize people. I've failed to get inside people's heads. I failed, like one of my failures you can see up on YouTube years ago. I was on stage in the Olympia and I was performing an escape. So escapology was a large part of what I did for a long time. I don't do it so much anymore. Although that being said, I do have an escape mind that I want to do in 2025. But anyway, I digress. So I was doing this escape. So I did this show called The Eight Deadly Sins. And I was examining all of the different deadly sins. And one of the sins is obviously the sin of greed. So I wanted to test the sin of greed. So I would get two audience members up. I would give them 100 foot of rope and they would tie me to a chair as tightly as they wanted, any way that they wanted, with 100 foot of rope. And then my twist was they were given a roll of cling film and then they would wrap my head with a roll of cling film so I couldn't see or breathe. And the game was to test their level of greed and how tightly they were going to bind me up. If I couldn't get out of both the rope and the cling film in less time than they tied me up in, I'd give them €1,000 each. Like, I trained for this, so I know what I'm doing. However, there was one night, they tied the ropes real kind of loosely, so I thought, this is going to be a piece of cake. Like, not a bother. But then this guy here on my right, he just grabbed one end of the rope and just slowly started to kind of cinch it down. And he was cinching it down to such an, and he was so strong that it was really kind of hurting me. Mm-hmm. And we had an assistant on stage who was holding a microphone to him. And I just said, what do you do for a living? And he said, I tie down truckloads for a living.
Oh my goodness.
So he'd wrapped me in such a way that all he had to do then was cinch it down. So it was loose until he cinched it down. So in any event, I kicked over in the chair and the chair fell back. And I winded myself. When I winded myself, I went to inhale. And when I went to inhale, I inhaled the cling film. And I just passed out. So that was it. One of my assistants was up in one of the boxes, which is, I don't know, 20 feet in the air, whatever it is. He jumped from there down to the stage because he knew I was in trouble. And Noel McHale, who was one of the promoters in MCD, he ran out on the stage. The audience was just sitting there going, what's going on? I always knew there was a risk that I might not get out. So I always put the escape at the end of a show, like anytime. So the audience has had 2.5 hours entertainment, so they can't ask for their money back if I get it wrong. But the shutter came down.
Were you scared?
No. Like, no, I deal with fear quite well.
Trying to survive.
Yeah. But like, you know, I think the reason I deal with fear quite well is my dad drilled it into me since I was a child. Panic achieves nothing. But the funny part, the end of the story, is the two guys then came around to the stage door in the Olympia and knocked on the stage door and said, where's our money? So they were paid. We paid them €1,000 each cash on the night. Yeah, so they went away with smiles on their face. So in other words, yeah, I can fail and I fail often, you know.
Keith, our theme is kind of changing times and changes. Yeah. And you've had significant changes along the way in your life that you've had to cope with. And they haven't all been easy. Tell us about the car crash.
I was at Jim Aiken of Aiken Promotions funeral up in Belfast. And I didn't know Jim, but Peter was my promoter at the time, Peter Aiken, his son. And I just went up to pay my respects, of course. And I was driving back from that. I was minding my own business. I was doing about 60 miles an hour. And the next minute, out of nowhere, a car came from the other side of the road, hit us head on. My car went into a spin, hit a wall. Like, my car started to smoke up on the outside. So the engine started just to kind of smoke up. And I looked down at my leg and I realized I was in trouble straight away because my foot was wrapped up around my shin going the wrong way. But interestingly enough, I didn't panic. And I remember specifically what I did, because a lot of people will pass out in that moment from the pain. I had a broken knee. My tibia and fibula, or fibula rather, had disintegrated all the way down. So multiple fractures in both. The metatarsals, which are the bones of the toes, they were fractured as well. And then my foot was dislocated and wrapped up around my shin. I thought my bone had gone through the skin, and my worry was that I was going to bleed to death. I grabbed my phone and I just started to call people from the car. And I remember calling like my mum, and my mum was in Marbella at the time, and I was like, listen, I've been in a really bad car accident, but I just don't want to pass out. So you just talk to me for a minute. And I rang my dad, and I rang my best friend Al, and I kept just trying to talk to people, because my manager at the time, he was injured also. So they took him off to hospital. They took the other guy who'd hit us off the hospital. So I was last, because especially the other guy, he went through his passenger window and he was badly injured. So they had to get the jaws of life to get me out. And interesting, when they were using the jaws of life, I laugh about it now, they caught my jacket in the jaws of life, and I was being pulled down, and the car was in flitters. Like,
what's the jaws of life?
You know, those big jaws.
Giant, oh, yes, of course.
Like these gigantic huge big things to cut the car open. They had to cut the car open to get me out. But they caught my jacket and the jaws of life, and they were pulling my head down towards like sharp metal. And I was trying to scream over the jaws of life. I was trying to tell them they're pulling me into the metal. It had taken about an hour and a half in total since the accident to get me to Daisy Hill Hospital. And when I went in there, the trauma surgeon, I think I'm kind of odd or strange, because I remember his name, Patrick Hyland McGuire. He was trying to get my foot back in its socket, and I kept tensing my body and screaming, and it kept popping back out and going the wrong way. And eventually he just stopped. And he said to me, Keith, if you don't somehow relax your body, I'm amputating your foot. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that part of the story. And given your podcast, like, I was thinking about this. That is a moment that actually...
life-changing moment.
Yeah, and it's a defining moment for a number of reasons. I actually genuinely had to go to a place in my head where I would put other people for many, many years. What I mean by that is, like, over the years, I've helped thousands of people, if not tens of thousands of people, overcome everyday problems, serious problems with their mindset. And here I am, and I'm thinking, I've got to practice what I preach here now. And this sounds crazy, but I actually used my mind to self-anesthetize myself from the waist down. And I've actually done that since with my wife.
How do you do that?
So I'll tell you in a second, but let's not forget, I did that with my wife years later, which is kind of a funny story, for the birth of our son, Braden. So I hypno-birthed Mairead for the birth of our son. But how do I do it? So in that exact moment, I had to self-hypnotize myself. It's literally shutting off your conscious mind and allowing yourself to get inside your subconscious mind, which is responsible, if you think about it, for pain management. It's responsible for our autonomic nervous system, which is basically your heart rate, your blood flow, your breathing. And that's what I had to control, was my autonomic nervous system. So I had to get inside my head, get inside it fast, and just get to another place in my head to allow him then to do what he needed to do. I was telling myself, I'm alive, I'm healthy, I'm pain-free. So that's what I programmed into my mind at the moment. And then he popped it back in. They immediately put me into an open leg cast. Then they transferred me up to the Royal Vic up in Belfast. And then I was up there for 3.5 weeks ultimately, until they rebuilt my leg. So I have a 7-inch plate and 13 screws. So after 3.5 weeks, they came in and they said, your left leg is now longer than your right leg. You know, I just said, no, I don't have time for that. And they started laughing at me. And at that exact moment, I called Peter Aiken. And I said, book me into Vicar Street for 3 months from now. The doctors are listening to me. I'm going to walk on that stage with no limp.
Mind over matter. Limp.
Yeah, completely mind over matter. I like to follow formulas in life, because I think if you follow formulas, there's an exact result. So the formula is SW, which is your subconscious why, and you add in massive action times SATT, is your subconscious attitude, equals GS, which is guaranteed success. So I was in Vincent's Hospital for my follow-up, and I was in with Gary O'Toole. Do you remember our Olympic swimmer? Yeah. So he was my follow-up orthopaedic. And I remember he looked at my leg when it came out of the cast. And I don't forget, I read body language for a living. He was like, oh, okay, yeah, so just keep doing your physio. But I could tell he wasn't happy with this leg that he was looking at. What's massive action? Where's the best physios? Not in Ireland, but in Europe. Where are they? And I thought about that, and I was like, well, they look after soccer players. And I got into Melwood, which is Liverpool training ground, for my physio. I got in because I took massive action. I called people and I just did everything I could. And I paid to be there. Victor Salinas was his name. And I'll never forget what he did. He just eventually said, you can laugh, you can sing, you can cry, you can puke, you can do whatever you want. Take a deep breath in. And he took his elbow and just whacked it into my leg. And that went on for hours. And then he took away a crutch. Because I went over with two crutches, and then I went back 5 weeks later and he did the same again. And he took away the other crutch. And then I came back and I thought, okay, that's good. And then how do I progress from here? And I rang Brian O'Driscoll. I don't even know how I got Brian's number, but I got Brian's number and I said, who's the best physio in Ireland? And he said, Mark McCabe, South Suffolk Street. And I went, okay. So I went to Mark McCabe every week for 12 years. And then ultimately I got on stage in Vicar Street and walked on with no limp. It wasn't like I was in the fittest stage of my life, but you know, that
your
was
mindset
the kind of,
that is was incredible.
The kind of, well, I think people need, like I released a book and it's called Mind Magic, and it's for kids. And it's for kids to understand that, you know, mindset is everything. It's everything for everybody. And
how would you define that? What does it mean? Like what are you trying to get the kids to understand about themselves?
So what I really would like kids to understand is that circumstances will always change, but ultimately the sun has gone up and going down. The tide is going in and coming out. Nothing really changes. All you can change is your reaction to the circumstances that happen around you. And what I mean by that is taking control of, you know, your frame of the world and taking control of your anxiety. We can do all of this without any need for drugs for the most part. So I'm not anti-drugs, but I think we're all pretty much in agreement that the world in general is over-medicated. I think there's far too much social anxiety and anxiety out there that doesn't need to exist. So back to mindset. How do you control your own mind? And that's what the book for kids is about. But how do we control our own minds, even as adults, I suppose, is the question, right? First and foremost, we got to eliminate noise. We're all guilty of it. You know, we all spend, on average, and it's a McKinsey study, about 13 and a half hours digitally distracted during business hours. So imagine your a normal working week is 40 hours. So the average person, it goes up and down from this, of course, is spending 13 and a half hours of that 40 hours online looking at stuff that's nothing to do with work. So whether that's Instagram or TikTok or news feeds or whatever it is, right? Now, that's just in work hours. Now, if you take that outside of work hours, we're all listening to war, pandemic. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, right? So if you examine things logically and scientifically, if you just take out whether you believe in the pandemic or don't believe in the pandemic or whatnot, all of this does to our mind is create fear inside our own heads. Ultimately, the stress hormone cortisol is in all of our systems way too much. What can we control? Well, first of all, in my keynotes, I always say to people, the first thing I want you all to do today is do a deep dive in your phone. So here's a question for the two Marys. When was the last time you did a deep dive in your phone to know where you're spending your time?
How do you do that?
Well, let's do it now. Let's do it now. Grab your phone. Come on. We'll just do it.
A deep dive.
Oh my God.
I don't think I've ever deep dived on my...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And people at home can do this as well. So you need to log on to what, like 4G or Wi-Fi or whatever it is. So you need to make sure it's 5G, not an airplane mode. So on an iPhone, are you on iPhones? Or?
Yeah, iPhone.
Okay, so on an iPhone, you go down, you go to screen time.
Oh, in settings.
So you go to settings.
Into settings.
And
screen
then
time, yeah.
Just a little bit down, you hit screen time. Okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
And Mine is trying to get on our 4G here in top Alan secret Wood. Location.
What's your daily average?
Is that a day? Oh, your daily average is higher than mine.
4 hours, 37 minutes.
Okay, what's yours?
2 hours and 59 minutes.
So you're nearly double Mary McAleese.
I do.
Is that good or bad?
Well,
that's my mother.
It's neither good nor bad for now. Here's mine, 5 hours, 9.
Wow. Okay?
But here's what you're going to want to do. You're going to want to click on see all app and website activity. That will tell you where you're spending your time.
Oh, yes, see all activity.
Right, so...
Okay,
so recently, I've been spending a lot of time on YouTube, Google Maps, WhatsApp, Gmail, Instagram, and then it goes on from there. Facebook, Safari. Now, TikTok is there. Now, I've done this recently, what I'm going to tell you to do, or ask you to do, rather, and people at home. Find an app that you know does not serve you. And what I mean by that is, like, what app are you looking at that you know is just rubbish, right? So for me, I've deleted two off of this phone recently. And you don't have to do it now.
So what are they?
I am not deleting the Irish Times.
That's exactly what you should be deleting.
Really?
You know enough news. You know enough news. News is not good for our brain, right? So ultimately...
I like the analysis stuff, though.
Leave on the podcast. So the two that I deleted off recently were Sky News, gone, deleted it off my phone. Because we know enough news. Like, you're looking at me horrified. You absorb too much news. I can already tell.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so...
It is true.
And then the other one was Twitter. So I deleted Twitter off my phone.
I don't do Twitter.
I didn't deactivate the account yet. I'm probably going to come off Twitter. I'm just... The only reason I haven't come off Twitter is because I've got 60,000 followers there. And for business, I like to let them know when I'm doing events and gigs and whatnot.
Yeah, but you can do that on Instagram.
Yeah, but I'm losing 60,000. But I think I am going to deactivate the account because it's just poison. It's poisonous.
The one I'm mostly on is Google Maps. That's because I have no sense of direction.
Yeah, but...
This is my...
I need it.
An hour and 14 minutes on Google Maps.
Back to the Irish Times, though. I think you should delete that off.
Really?
You won't believe the shift in your mindset if you just delete off an app that no longer serves. So I'll give you an example. There was a lady who came...
But it does serve her.
Yeah, but I read that every morning.
And you're just feeding your brain with bad information that's negative.
What's going on in the world?
Why? If you do digital news detox for a month, you won't believe the shift in your mindset. See, people say you have to know what's going on in the world. I always go, well, why? Can you help? Are you helping right now? Like right now, what's going on in the Gaza Strip? Can you help?
I think you can. And
probably in your position, you can.
Well,
right?
It's not even that. I do think public pressure can come on governments. Governments can set policies. Policies can put pressure on other governments. And that's what we're seeing happen at the minute.
I'm not so sure.
Awareness is important as well.
Okay, click back to 40 years ago. When you just get the news once a week, how different people's mindsets are. You see, you'll say awareness is key, and my children and their contemporaries will say, well, we need to have our social life on TikTok. We have to know what's going on TikTok. And, you know, their frame of that world is this exact same frame that you've just told me. But here's the thing. We are in an avalanche of mental health problems right now. And a large proportion of that avalanche is down to the amount of time that we're spending on these phones absorbing this negative news feed. Awareness. Okay, you might say we need to be aware. I can't necessarily disagree with that. But how deep do you need to go? Like, how deep do you need to be aware? And for me, you know, we can't solve the world's problems. And it seems to me that everybody's taking the world's problems on our shoulders the whole time.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
You mentioned younger generation, and there is a real problem with them, say, on Instagram and seeing people's lives, and they're not real lives, and thinking that they want to be like that. And then that leads to a kind of a depression. That's a big difficulty for.
The problem, misinformation is everywhere now, and it's hard for all of us to filter.
But even this idealism of perfect lives, perfect body, perfect makeup, they're hugely.
There's something not being talked about in this country right now, specifically with kids. And the reason I know this is I've noticed it since the pandemic through my own website, which is there's a huge influx of kids with eating disorders in this country. And I'm not hearing that be talked about a lot. Of course, it is being talked about, but not a lot. We're getting probably, on average, 6 to 10 emails a day from parents, concerned parents, asking me, can I help hypnotize their young kids with their eating disorders? Now, I'm not a professional psychotherapist, child psychotherapist, so I can't help these kids in that regard. Yeah, I think the large part of that, I think we have to acknowledge, is digitization.
Yeah.
And ultimately,
screen time.
And ultimately, like, I was talking to some parents recently, and they're having problems with their two daughters, because their two daughters, like, they're 15 and they're dressing inappropriately, and then they want to be spray tanned, and they want the eyelashes, and they want
the nails.
But I just go, but yeah, you're the parents. It's like, it's difficult, but like, I have battles with my own kids, but I make sure I win the battles. But then
you're advocating huge change in the way we live life.
Well, I'm advocating making sure that we look after each other's mindset. So here's my advice for people who are struggling with these kids who are struggling. Like, it's the nails, that they're all filtering themselves. And the change that's needed is, like, allowing these kids to understand that it's not all aesthetics, right? And it is on, as simple as and cheesy and all as it might sound, is what's on the inside that counts first and foremost, right? But how do we change that? How do we shift that? There's no easy fix. But I'll tell you, a quick fix is distraction. So how do you distract them to get offline? So in the Barry household, here's some simple distraction methods. But I brought them in at a young age, right? So they weren't just brought in recently. So the younger you can do this, the better. But no phones at the dinner table, and we all sit and have dinner. But then we all get to discuss what happened during our day. Sometimes those discussions turn into arguments. Never the news. Their news, not the news.
It's funny because there's a question here that says, if you could change one thing in the world, what would it be? I think he's already answered that, Mary, hasn't he? You've definitely answered that question.
Delete the news. Be aware, but delete the news.
Social, yeah.
Yeah, like I have to use social for my business. But if I wasn't in the business I'm in now, I'd be off all social channels, and then I would learn about the news and be aware by reading the newspaper on a Sunday, old school style, because then I don't have to deal with it every single day.
If you go back to another episode in your life when your grandfather was assaulted in his own home.
Yeah.
And then he died a few days later.
Mm, 5 days later, I think it was.
Tell me, and presumably there's a direct connection between the assault and the death.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever get prosecuted for that?
No, like, we can go down a rabbit hole here now, and it's a crazy rabbit hole. But yeah, so look, I was probably closer to Paddy, was his name, than probably anybody. Now, he had four sons, one of which was my father. And 96 Mountside Avenue, he was 82. He was sitting down having a can of Carling Black Label, having a cigarette, watching television. And we know there was more than one person, so multiple burglars. It was September night, so it would have been bright. I think it was about 9 o'clock, that kind of time, maybe half nine. So it's still bright out. And you have to understand, this is right in the middle of Waterford City in a mid-terraced house. And his alarm went off. He had his alarm on. But nobody came out to check why his alarm was going off. And as people don't. And I'll never forget, ever since then, anytime an alarm goes off, I always, no matter what time it is or how tired I am, I always get up and look out the window just to see what's going on, just to see is there anything going on, you know? But people didn't that day. And I can't fault them, of course, for that. People just don't listen to alarms. It was two or three burglars, we believe. And they broke down his front door, so either with a screwdriver or something like that. And he had three locks on his door, you know? And they got through those. And ultimately, when he rang the guards, he rang them and he said his arm was bleeding. Turns out his arm was broken. So it was definitely a defensive wound. And ultimately, when the guards did arrive, because he'd called the guards, they found him kind of half out and half in his doorstep, having hit his head off the ground. So we don't know whether he's pushed or he just fell after whatever interaction he'd had with those burglars. And ultimately, he died 5 days later. Like, it's so horrendous to even talk about it now. It brings it all back. But nobody was ever charged. Mm. Nobody was ever brought to justice for it. And it's painful because, look, truth be told, you know, there was a lot of noise about it, given the fact that it was my grandfather. I'll never forget, actually. I've never really talked about this, but, like, even at his funeral, a whole bunch of... And you've obviously probably had this in your lives at various points, but a whole bunch of reporters turned up, you know, and I was carrying this coffin, and I just couldn't believe that they were there just trying to get a soundbite, you know, at my grandfather's burial. But ultimately, anyway, Yeah, so it went on for a long time, like the investigation and whatnot. We were in close contact with Waterford guards. And then, being honest with you, out of nowhere, I saw a newspaper report that said Paddy Barry's injuries consistent with a fall and had no interaction with the burglars. Now, if you think about this for a minute, right, just as a logical human being, he's sitting down having a can of Carling Black Label, watching television, and 5 days later he's dead. Mm. Like, did he jump up and throw himself around the room and slap his head off a wall and break his own arm? Like,
he's found at his front door.
Mm. Yes.
With his head effectively damaged.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
So it was crazy.
Yeah.
And where that came from, because this story has never really been told, was the state pathologist. He put in his report, all injuries consistent with a fall. So as a family, we lost our minds about this now. And ultimately, I challenged that state pathology report in the inquest, and he could not stand over his own report. I'll never forget it. He was shaking like this, trying to pour himself a glass of water, and the glass of water was going all over the table because he couldn't stand over his own report. I can't even remember his name. It was a long time ago now. But I said, where did you get the information that Paddy Barry had no interaction with the burglars, and therefore you made a report that said all injuries consistent with a fall? And he was trying to go through his papers, shaking like a little leaf, and he just looked up in front of the whole room full of people. So this is on record, and he went, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? I said, he had a broken arm when he rang the guards, and he was black and blue. I might, with my own eyeballs, I saw my grandfather, he's black and blue. And I think because of that report, I think the guards in Waterford took their foot off the gas, right? Mm. But
sure, they knew the door had been broken in.
Oh, yeah. Like, no, he'd been... Like,
the door had been broken in, kicked into the guards. Oh, yeah, and he phoned the guards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. The door was busted open. Like, he was assaulted. And ultimately, you know, the guard said to me, you need to quieten down, Keith, because you're affecting the investigation, because it was very noisy at the time. And I went, okay, no problem. So I quietened down. And ever since I quietened down, the guards have never rang us since. And then the crazy part about this is earlier this year, in February, I was sent a photograph, which I still have, I might add, from Waterford Regional Hospital, where somebody had gone in and spray painted in the public toilets. And of course, I'm not going to name any names or anything like that, but just so we know what's going on. Spray painted, so-and-so pushed old man Paddy Barry. Here's the address. And there's some other stuff written there as well. And I did what you're supposed to do. I called the Waterford guards, got a lovely young female guard. She had no knowledge of the case. Sent her the photograph. She said, okay, I'll look into it. Not one phone call since from the Waterford guards. Like, imagine that as a family. Like, that's the way you're treated.
How many years is that now since your granddad died?
I'm useless with years. So I think my accent was 2007. So 2009.
Yeah.
A lot to cope with.
Well, do you know what? You bury it. So you choose to either continue the quest to get justice or you bury it. So we continued the quest for a long time, but it eats you. Mm. Like, it eats you. And you have to make a choice. And I see some families don't make a choice, but that becomes their life.
Yeah.
And it's a very painful existence and a painful life. So we kind of chose as a family, look, let's just bury this and understand that we're not going to get justice no matter what we do. And that was what we did. But then it brings all back up when all of a sudden new information comes up all these years later.
As could very well happen. I mean, if there were more than one involved, even if there's only one involved, I mean, a conscience might get to somebody.
Well, that's what I think seemed to happen. Like, and by the way, there was stuff spray painted 2 days running in Waterford Regional Hospital, because the first day the cleaners cleaned it off.
And the second, same name?
Same name, I believe, wow. Yeah. And but like, I don't even know if the Waterford guards investigated. Honestly, I'll probably just ring him today. Do you know what I mean? Because we're here and we're talking about it. But it's not going to amount to anything. Mm. They're not putting any energy into it. And look, just be on record. Like, this is just an opinion, okay? So this is me, Keith Barry, not the magician, the mentalist, just the grandson of somebody who got killed. Like, this should be an open murder investigation. Like, that's what it should be. Because, you know, for the fact that he was just sitting there watching television and he ended up dead 5 days later, you know, you might say that's too strong, but for
well,
me,
having gone through a brutal assault in the interim as well.
Yeah, like, you know.
Well, the circumstances of his death are not clear. Mm. That's the first thing. They're just not clear. Oh, but there are aspects of it that are clear. Like, there was a burglary. He phoned it in. He was sitting on the sofa having his beer, and he ends up on the front step of mm-hmm. the house. So, yeah, there's a injured. There, and he ends up so severely injured that he dies from the yeah. injuries. So, yeah, that doesn't look like an open and shut case to me. It looks like an open case.
Oh, no, they'll probably tell you it's an open case, but yeah. is anybody looking into it? The answer yeah. to that is no.
They don't have any
leads.
You
know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is a lead that I gave them. I mean, this becomes the temptation then, right? It's like when you're not getting energy back, like, should I just fire that photograph out on social media? Should I just fire that?
Yeah, well, the only problem with that then is things like the laws of libel, defamation.
Oh, yeah, but I don't mean the actual yeah. photograph. So I mean, yeah. like, blur it out a bit, send it out there. Mm. Like, you know, what's the right thing to do? Because if they're not doing the right thing, like, well, you know, you just bury that again. You know what I mean? And they're complex questions. It's not an easy question that, like, should I send that photograph to the press, let the press do something with it? Like, you know what I mean? And you think no, but then when you think you've done the right thing and sent it the right direction, and you don't even get a courtesy phone call. Like, I'm not looking for, like, Inspector Cluedo here. I'm looking for a courtesy call. Do you know what I mean?
Even if it just is to say that didn't check out.
Yeah. Mm. Like, we looked at that.
Yeah.
And we found out it was complete yeah. rubbish and was some crazy person. And
yeah, or a vendetta or whatever.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really feel for injustice based upon that. That's why I even say to my kids, you know, don't allow anybody to be bullied. I can't stand seeing injustice. But we're at the tail end of that. And again, look, I think...
Were you ever bullied? I'm just thinking, yeah. as a kid who's into magic, you know, rather than running around playing football or hurling or whatever, were you bullied at school because of the magic, do you think? Is that possible?
No, not because of magic. The problem in my school was a very specific problem. It was like when you were being bullied, if you hit the bully back, they were from a specific part of town, that there was going to be a gang waiting for you after school. Yeah. And that was a true reality. Like, that's what would happen. You get beaten up by a full gang after school, you know. So you just got to put your head down and go through it, you know.
How'd you cope with that?
Well, this is the thing, you see. I think kids need to be more resilient these days, you know. And that comes back to how we nurture them, how we teach them, how we mold them. And I just had great parents who nurtured me and taught me and molded me. And it was like, back to my dad, like, you know, always he would say to me, never give up. Panic achieves nothing. And that gets into your psyche. And then you learn to deal with, you know, detrimental situations. And then I probably coped afterwards, after school, that is, through my magic. That was kind of my outlet, you know.
Mm. But when you were a young lad, growing up in Williamstown in Waterford and having those experiences, you know, of rough living in school, did you dream that one day you'd be on world stages and on Ellen DeGeneres doing a TED Talk? I mean, let's face it, Keith, that's a massive life change that you've accomplished.
Yeah, so I always dreamed of... You know,
so I'm going to do that. That's going to happen.
Yeah,
for me.
I think. Look, of course, I wasn't dreaming of TED Talks. I didn't even know what that was. Even if a lot of people listen to this wouldn't even know what it is. But this sounds crazy. But when I was five, I just knew I'd found my passion, my path, and I would always dream of, you know, later years when I was kind of 15, 16. The dream was to perform in Las Vegas, and it's 15 years ago. I headlined a Planet Hollywood, so I was there for 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know,
were you married at the time? Had you family?
So the reason I know it was 15 years ago is our daughter, Brianna, she was born on the 13th of August. And in September, the end of September, so kind of like 5 weeks later, okay, I got the deal in Vegas.
Mm.
And I had to sit down with my wife and go, I know we've got a 5-week-old baby, but Vegas is kind of happening. Like, it was the dream, right? But then I realized, you know, family first. And I've stuck with that since. So I was only there a couple of days and I realized I really need them out here. So I flew my wife, Brianna, who was only like a couple of weeks old, and my mum, Kitty, to help raid with Brianna because she was so young. So the three of them came out and they stayed there for the 6 months. Mm. So it was great.
As a freelance entertainer, the pandemic kind of shut it all down. That must have been tough.
Yeah, so for the first 6 weeks, you know, I tried to enjoy it for a couple of weeks. I've never gotten depressed. Mm-hmm. So I'm lucky enough to have never experienced that.
There's no money coming in.
I've had low moments, but I got low is what I would say. I would call it, I just got low, you know. And there's, and you know, when you mention money, it's interesting, right? People would probably have a perception of both of you and I as, you know, maybe we're all financially independent and financially free. It's not true. And I don't live like a crazy, extravagant lifestyle. I need to work, though. You know, I need to work to pay certain bills and whatnot. So I got a list off of Fiverr. Fiverr.com is where it's at, lads. So it's, you can get graphics done up there. I'm sure Enda over there knows what Fiverr.com is. And ultimately, you can get graphics done. You can get so I got a list, though. The list was, I got 3,000 email addresses. So I got them to provide me with 3,000 email addresses of business people here in Ireland. And ultimately, that was to say that I can perform virtually on Zoom. And then nothing happened. So, you know what I mean? I was just like, that was a great waste of time. Sent in 3,000 emails. And then we got one call for a virtual gig. And I'll never forget, I did this virtual gig and I didn't really know what I was doing. We were trying to figure out the Zoom thing. And but if I got one gig, the avalanche happened. And then we got a lot of gigs. Mm. And then we got a lot more gigs. So I got really busy during COVID.
You're so intensely involved in your work. You've talked about family. What do you do actually just to relax?
Fishing.
You fish?
Oh, I'm mad about fishing. Now, I'm Mr. Obsessed here. Right? So you'll find me down in Waterford, like -5 degrees Celsius, with a hat on my head and frost on the hat, fishing for cod because the cod come in during winter. Then March, salmon season starts, so I'll fish for salmon. I'll very often go down to Blackwater and I'll fly fish on the Blackwater, but I'm not posh about it. I don't mind spinning for salmon. And then during the summer months, I'll fish for sea bass. So I fish all year round. Mm. I still love magic as a hobby. Like for me, when I'm standing on stage in the Bor Gáis or the Olympia, it's more the brain hacking stuff that I do now, but I still love magic as a hobby. So I like just sitting with a deck of cards and doing that. But I have many hobbies. So I've got green fingers. So I'm growing garlic spuds, carrots, like all sorts, broccoli. And then the other thing that I'm like truly kind of passionate about is, and this is a kind of a funny one because most people don't get it at all, is sprouting. So
go ahead. Like bean sprouts.
So you can use bean sprouts, but it's not like, so
you don't let them grow.
Sprouting is where a little, yeah. So it's a little jar. You just get yourself a little jar with a lid with holes in it and you put in a bunch of seeds in there. You put in some water, leave it there for 8 hours, rinse that off. And then within 3 days, they germinate basically. So sprouts have the highest level of probiotics and prebiotics known to man. Yet we choose to go to a chemist and buy, you know, for €45, find the 1,000 culture or whatever it is. No, just get yourself a cheap bag of seeds and sprout them. And the reason I do that is because, like, I've got one of those, whatever you call it, hiatus hernias. So I sometimes just get acid reflux. So instead of popping the pills or any of that, I've found that sprouting is the way to go.
And would you put them in a salad?
Yeah, salad. Generally, at lunchtime, throw them in a salad. But sometimes I'll just sit there and I'll be having a, like, sprouted mung beans while I'm watching
sprouted
television.
Sprouted mung beans?
Yeah, mung beans. You can sprout pretty much anything. So, yeah, so they're all my hobbies. Sprouting, fishing, work, like all these different things. For my mindset, you know, breath work is brilliant. You know, Wim Hof is the most popular out there now. But again, lots of...
Did you get into his cold tub?
Yeah, so like I've got an... I was just in the ice bath before I came here.
An ice bath?
Yeah, an ice bath in the back garden. So I was in the ice bath for 5 minutes at 2 degrees just before I came here. And then I've been over to Wim Hof to his seminars in Stroh, which is an hour north of Amsterdam. So here's the thing. I'm infinitely curious about everything. I think if you...
Obviously.
But like I don't...
Do you feel the benefit now of the ice baths? Seriously, you do.
All of it. I feel the benefit of the sprouts and the ice baths because all these things, again, I think the major thing we all need to know is... like figure out a way for you that reduces the cortisol level in your body and increase your oxytocin levels, increase your serotonin levels. And there's like dozens and dozens of ways that you
and
can do
that. And you're not throwing yourself into the sea every day like a lot of people
are
doing.
Oh, I would if I live near the sea. I don't live near the sea. So I'm originally from Williamstown, which is 7 miles from Dunmore East. Mm. So like I'd be a sea swimmer if I lived near the sea. So like, but it's an hour for me to get to the sea.
So it's ice baths now.
It's ice baths. I do the cold shower. At the end of the shower, I make it cold.
Do you know?
How long do you stay in it?
About 45 seconds.
Here's my
do scientific... Do a foot twirls in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reason I do it, Keith, is that it makes it easier to go out of the shower because the bathroom is cold. So if you're coming out of a hot shower, it's a huge contrast. But if it's a cold shower, you're just...
But here's my top tip for you on that is increase it slowly, just 5 seconds a day to 2 minutes. Because but scientifically speaking, 2 minutes is when you get the benefits, not longer. So very often you see online people challenging each other, say 25 minutes in an ice bath or this and that and the other. Actually, science says 2 minutes. So 2 minutes will reduce inflammation, also activate your brown fat cells and then reduce your cortisol levels. So 2 minutes
here's
is the
scientist
optimum level.
Coming out again.
Yeah, so commit to yourself 2 minutes.
I'll get Martin to try that.
You try it, Mary.
No, I'll get him to try first.
Yeah, and you don't need to have your head in there. You don't need to have your head in there for 2 minutes.
No, I couldn't put my head in.
But I dunk my head in and out. But actually, because we've very little skin or fat on our skull, it's actually technically quite bad for you to keep your head in there and get the brain freeze. You don't really want to get the brain freeze, but it's good to pop the head in and out, all right. Mm. But after that, 2 minutes. 2 minutes is your challenge.
I'll try.
Okay. Well, I want to say a big thank you to you, Keith, for terrifying the living lights out of me.
Thank you.
And for revealing Mary's secret of wanting a fridge for Christmas. But really, it's been just the most exciting thing listening to you. You've taken my mind to places that I never thought it would ever be capable of going.
Same. I didn't know where we were going with this,
and I'm not sure that I'm able to get my way back from it. But it's just been wonderful. Thank you. We are so grateful to you.
Thanks
for
having me.
Keep finding that energy.
Keep the head down and always remember, there's no magic sprinkle. There's no magic dust.
Magic everywhere.
The real magic is inside your heads. Aww. Simple as that.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
So that's it for this episode of Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations. Thank you, as always, to our researcher, Anne-Marie Staunton.
And, of course, to our producer, Enda Grace.
And to you, our loyal listeners.
Don't forget to follow Changing Times wherever you get your podcasts.
So from Alan Wood, here in County Kildare, Slána Gaoithe. Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Support comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.